You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Radio show brought to you by Last Word on Sports. I'm Molly Smith, and joining me as always is Rob Mitchell. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm good, Mom. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And joining us again after a great job a couple of weeks ago is Last Word on Sports rugby writer Catherine Cole. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm all right, thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Thank you for joining us again. We're going to start with the weekend's roundup as usual. And it was obviously European games again this weekend, round two of the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup. So we're going to start with the Champions Cup, and Ulster kick things off with their game against Saracens. They lost 9 points to 27. Benetton Treviso hosted the Leicester Tigers. They lost 3 points to 36. Bath got a good win over Leinster, 19 points to 16. Toulouse beat US Oynax 24-18. At the weekend, Glasgow Warriors were defeated by Northampton Saints 15 points to 26. Scarlets were defeated by Racing 92, 12 points to 29. Exeter beat Union Bordeaux 34-19. Clermont-Auvergne 34-29 versus the Ospreys. Stade Francais and the Munster versus Munster match, that was postponed at the weekend. And Wasps-Toulon, the score there at the Rico on Sunday, 32 points to 6. Kate, I'm going to come to you first. What match stood out for you?
It's got to be Wasps-Toulon, hasn't it? Yeah. I think everyone will agree.
Yeah, it was a great match, wasn't it?
Yeah, what a game. What a result. No one really expected that one. I think it was completely dominant by Wasps. Toulon, I think the only place where they really had any sort of advantage was in the scrum. Mm-hmm. And the best bit for me was that there's so many English talents kind of coming through. So Gaskell was man of the match, but Joe Simpson was brilliant, and there was a lot of comments about Joe Simpson after the game. I mean, Nathan Hughes was outstanding. It was just so many really good individual performances, and what a great win to pull off. So pretty good from Wasps, and on the back of last week as well, it's looking very good for them.
Yeah, I mean, the French giants Toulon just didn't really ever get a look in that game, did they, Rob?
No, the Toulon All-Stars or invitational selection team, as you could probably call them these days, because there aren't many Frenchmen in there. They didn't really perform, and I think it's not just the win by Wasps. Obviously, Toulon have been fairly dominant in the Champions Cup in recent years. It's the size of the win as well.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a real shock, and it's going to be a real tough ask now for Toulon to start to get back into this pool. They have a tough pool, and Bath were obviously showed how well they played at the weekend. Wasps now have two wins from two, and it's an uphill struggle because Toulon have got to fit that game with Bath in somewhere that they missed out on a couple of weeks ago. So that's going to mean a short week playing that game as well.
Yeah, and obviously we spoke last week on Absolute Flanker about where they might position that game if they do replay it at all. But it was such a resounding victory. It was almost like one Toulon didn't turn up. It was almost like the travelling aspect of their journey really hindered them. But Wasps at the Rico are just a force to be reckoned with at the minute, aren't they, Kate?
Absolutely. And there's so much talk of them being sort of back to their European days where they were sort of really ruling Europe. And it's early to say it, but you can see it. I mean, it's the group of death, pool five. It's a very strong group with Bath, Leinster and Toulon, and they're sitting at the top of it quite happily. It's a really great start for them, and especially off the back of sort of Avima Premiership, they're sitting mid-table, they're doing all right, but to come into this and have two big wins, it looks very good indeed.
Yeah, definitely. Also, another Premiership side, Northampton Saints had a good win on the road against Glasgow Warriors. Obviously, going to Scotland, it's never a mean feat. And obviously, they got a 26-15 victory over Glasgow there. Rob, it was you know, for a side like Saints, who haven't necessarily had the greatest start to the Premiership, this was them putting their marker down and saying, actually, don't forget us, we're still a very, very good side. We won the Premiership 2 years ago, and, you know, we did well in the European games last year. You know, we're back and we're fighting it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Saints sort of have embraced the break, as it were, the European Champions Cup has provided them from their struggles in the Premiership, shall we call it. Yeah, they've managed to get two wins, not possibly the most convincing wins they would have liked. They've not got any bonus points out of it, but wins are wins in the Champions Cup, and they're not to be sniffed at, as Leinster will most definitely testify to, having come out of their two games with no wins. So yeah, it put just a bit more confidence back in the side, and they'll look to then transfer that into their Premiership form.
Yeah, and talking about that Leinster game, it was a bit of a closer affair there at the rec, with Bath only winning by the 3 points, 19 points to 16. Kate, I know Bath are obviously a big force in the Premiership and with the European games alike, but Leinster seemed to up their game this week, and obviously, as Rob just mentioned, that home defeat last weekend really seemed to niggle them, didn't it? So I think it was almost like they were coming back this week and meaning business.
Oh, definitely. But I think it's the first time since mid-1990s that they've lost both openers, so a bit of a shock for the Irishmen. But Bath were good, and we say it was close, but Bath were really sort of the attacking team. They were throwing the ball around. They looked good. The reason they probably didn't get more points on the board was they were full of errors. If they could eliminate that from their game, they were really starting to look good. And it was a tight game, but it was a very error-filled game. And I think actually Bath were sort of the stronger team in attack and play. And if they could take that out of their game, they're looking really strong.
Yeah,
it's all right for Leinster now. They've got a couple of really games with back-to-back games against Toulon.
Yeah, nice and easy. For Bath, I know there was a lot of talk about guys who've, especially England players, with the announcement of Eddie Jones being England head coach, which we'll talk about later on in the show. But there was a lot of talk in this weekend's games about England players really stepping up and, you know, making themselves noticed by Jones and whichever coaching team he's going to bring in. But for Bath, Nick Auderack was a great standout performance, wasn't it, Rob?
Yeah, I think it was a great performance, and yeah, I don't think I can say much more than that, really. You've highlighted it there.
Yeah, we're going to quickly touch upon one of the Italian sides. Benetton Treviso hosted Leicester Tigers. They lost, kind of not surprising, 3 points to 36. Tigers, you know, were aware that Treviso do put up a battle when they're hosting teams, especially big teams like Tigers. They know it's a big occasion, and they try their best to fight them off. But 3 points to 36, Tigers got the bonus point, and, you know, again, another team that are riding high after two games in the Champions Cup. Kate, are they onto a great track here with their pool, or do you think that they need to start perhaps looking ahead? And, you know, Treviso were almost one of them sides that they knew they could easily beat.
I think even if the side's easy to beat, at the end of the day, Leicester came and they did what they needed to do. They've got two bonus points out of two games. I don't think you can ever write off a side. I mean, we see him with some of the other results. You can't just write off sides. And at the minute, especially with teams like Zebre coming through, who knows what's going to happen. So I think Leicester should be pretty pleased. I mean, they're sitting in a pool with Munster and Stad, and they're sitting at the top happily with two bonus points. It's a pretty good start to their European challenge, and the Premiership's going well as well for them, so looks pretty good to me for them at the minute.
Yeah, definitely. And we are going to move on to the Challenge Cup now, and Cardiff Blues kick things off on Thursday night with a 20 points to 32 defeat to Harlequins. La Rochelle were beaten by Gloucester 20 points to 33. Argon hosted Edinburgh and were beaten 6 points to 27. Montpellier had a huge win over Calvisano, 64 points to 0. Zebre, as you were just saying, Kate, had another great game in the Challenge Cup, 27 points to 8 against the Worcester Warriors. Sale Shark beat Pau 29 points to 20. Castres Olympique 32 against Newport Gwent Dragons, who scored 29. Connor 21, Brive 17 in that match. Grenoble 27, London Irish, they only managed the 20 points there. And Newcastle Falcons had a big win at home against NCISTM at 55 points to 7. Rob, I'm going to come to you. We talk about the Challenge Cup being a bit more open, a bit more competitive. What game stood out for you there?
The Zebra-Worcester Warriors game for me. Zebra obviously had a great start for them to the Pro 12. They're getting a couple of early wins. And they've taken that form into the Challenge Cup and shown that they're developing as a side, and I think it's great to see, and hopefully it will continue.
Yeah, and they're almost two sides that are emerging, aren't they? Obviously, Worcester being newly promoted in the Premiership, they've got off to a very good start there, and Zebra this season are you know, really making waves. They are becoming the dominant Italian side in the Pro 12 and in the Challenge Cup. And yeah, they're really making an impression this season, aren't they, Kate?
Absolutely. I think it was Worcester's first ever defeat by an Italian side or something crazy like that. So completely unexpected. But I mean, they came out, they scored two tries really early on. It was within the first 20, maybe even sooner than that. And Worcester never really got back into the game after that. It was completely sort of Zebra from the start. And it was Worcester were chasing the whole way through. So good for Zebra, I say. And it's wonderful to see sort of competitions start to open up like this. And you can't just say anymore that there are these teams you can write off. Like Zebra sitting at second in pool four. It's nice to see. It's good for the game.
Yeah, definitely.
It's as if Zebra looked at the World Cup and have taken inspiration from teams like Japan and Georgia, and they said, if they can do that at an international level, we can do this at a club level.
Yeah, they're definitely doing something right. It seems they've changed a little bit of their style of play, and they're a bit more, you know, their attacking style definitely has gone up a gear, and it's making all the difference. Like we say, they're you know, really competitive this season so far, and long may it continue, because like it's nice to see a side like Zebra coming through the ranks and, you know, really fighting for their place in these sorts of leagues and actually making themselves noticed. And like we say, it's great, and it's nice to have that competitiveness there. Whizzing back to last Thursday, Cardiff Blues hosted Harlequins. I know, Kate, you'd have been very interested in this game, being a Quins fan yourself. A good win for Quins, 32 points over 20 against Cardiff. Kate, was it that Cardiff perhaps just were outplayed, or were Harlequins just too strong for them?
I don't think they were outplayed as such. We didn't get into their 22 for the first sort of, took us about half an hour to actually get into their 22. It's quite interesting on the Quins side of things. That's 2 weeks now that we've gone into the break, not necessarily with a strong position, and come out with two very dominant results. I don't know what's being said at half time, but we're coming out a different team both weeks. I think it's a bit of a summary of Cardiff's season. I don't think they were actually that bad at all. I think the Matthew Rees red card really hurt them. I think the two Quins tries, there was two in a very quick succession from Visser and Lindsay Haig, I think it was, which again sort of put the pressure on the scoreboard. They weren't that bad. They were forcing penalties all over the place in the first half. They were tearing apart the Quins scrum. Somewhere it just falls apart for Cardiff, and I think it's the same in everything. They've got now one win in Europe, one win in the Pro 12. All of the games are close. We were talking a couple of weeks ago about how many bonus points they've actually picked up in the Pro 12. They are close games. And somewhere they sort of lose concentration. I mean, on Thursday night it was letting Quins in for those two tries, and that was it. And that was kind of momentum reversed, and then it was just Cardiff chasing the game.
Do you think there's a problem with their sustainability for the whole 80 minutes? Do you think perhaps there's a substitution error there, or do you think it's a lot down to discipline? And obviously there was the red card, and you know, when it comes to errors like that within discipline and, you know, giving away penalties, do you think that's where they're losing the game?
I think it's more a lack of concentration. I mean, they had the penalty count throughout the first half. They were really dominating the scrum. I think they got penalties up something like the first three Quins scrums. So I think it's they switch off, and once the momentum starts to go the other way, they lose that drive that we saw in the first half. And I know after the game, there was a lot of talk about a first half try that didn't go upstairs and probably should have gone to the TMO. But they then use that as sort of an excuse, and I think actually as soon as momentum switched the other way, they lost that passion slightly.
Yeah, it's clearly something to be addressed, and going this weekend, going into back into the Pro 12, perhaps they'll you know take a lot of out of this Challenge Cup and take it into the Pro 12, and like you say, having this break again between the European and the domestic league. Rob, they are back to we do have back to back weekends, and there is no let up this season because of the delayed start because of the World Cup. Do you think that Cardiff Blues are going to be a side that, you know, fall short of the way that the fixtures are laid out this season?
I think if they can't sort of overcome this sort of bit where they do fall away in the end of games, that could then see them fall away at the end of the season if they don't even get that far, if they're not picking up the points. So it's a tough season, and you've got to be on it every week for the whole 80 minutes. And teams have shown that. I mean, Toulon showed that if you're not on it for a game, you lose a game. That's it. And suddenly your back's against the wall like Leinster. So Cardiff are now finding the same in the Challenge Cup. They've lost to Harlequins, and they've still got Montpellier to come, so there's no room for errors this season. You've got to just get on with it, and any sort of missteps need to be fixed as they go. You can't wait 3 weeks and say, okay, now we've got that sorted. Oh wait, we're already out of the competition.
Yeah, it's you've got to hit the ground running, haven't you? You've got to really get them cogs turning, and like we said, keep that sustained throughout the whole season. When it comes to the games, you know, you've got to be on your full attack for 80 minutes and really have it together. And unfortunately, Cardiff Blues were just fell short the weekend. So we'll see how they fare when we preview this weekend's action, and they will be back in the Pro 12 domestic league there. Another game at the weekend, Barbarians faced Argentina. The final score there, 31-49. Kate, it's always a bit of a historical, but a little bit more laid back when the Barbarians play. They're a side that are especially this time, full of so many familiar names and faces. Playing a side like Argentina, who, okay, they didn't field their strongest side, sometimes the scoreline doesn't matter, does it, when it comes to the Barbars?
No, it was such a fun game. I think they had over 600 international caps on their team. So, I mean, such a big team. So many people sort of playing their last. And it was fast flowing, it was fun. I think the last kick of the game kind of summed that up, with Becky's Botha taking the final conversion, did a bit of a mick take of Dan Bigger in the big arena as he set up for it, and everyone was laughing and everyone was loving it. I think everyone was willing it to go over, and I mean him taking.
I mean, he hit the post. To be fair to him,
he hit the post.
So
and the fact he then took it from Victor Matfield's try as well, it was lovely. I think everyone, it's a really nice game, and I don't think they've actually played Argentina that much, but it was a really fun game, and not quite so nitty-gritty as some recent Barbars games have been. It was a lot of people just throwing the ball around and kind of enjoying the rugby, and that's always lovely to see.
Yeah, especially, you know, especially after the World Cup and the intensity of that. You know, you just have to look at some of the names that the Barbars team featured. You've got Stephen Moore, obviously the Australian captain, De Jager, like you said, Victor Matfield, Scott Fardy, Surveyor, Nemani Nadalu. You've got so many big names there, Rob, that actually it's like Kate was saying, obviously it was a final appearance for guys like Victor Matfield and Bakis Botha. It's more of a historical affair rather than the scoreline actually taking prominence, isn't it?
Yeah, in the modern era it's very tough for the Barbarians because they get about a week, if that, to put a team together. So you're never going to have that same cohesiveness as players. I mean, even if you look at the Argentina squad, wasn't their full, what you'd call their starting 15 that played at the World Cup. They've still all been in the squad. They've still all been working together for months now in terms of having been at the World Cup. So it's always going to be tough. And that's so you want to see them just try and fling it about a little bit, give the crowd some entertainment, and see some of these great players all playing together.
Yeah, I remember last season when Barbarians played Leicester Tigers, and it's just one of them nights that you're there to enjoy it, rugby, and it's what rugby's all about. You know, everyone getting together, it's friendly, it's fun, it's entertaining. Yes, the standard of rugby is up there, and you know there are some, there's some great game played, but it's more about just everyone getting together and the atmosphere and it being a lot of fun and entertaining, isn't it, Kate?
Yeah, it's a real family game. I always say it with a big game at Christmas. I think the Barbar is also completely it's one of those things about rugby that you don't get in many other sports, that you can all go and you can have fun, and everyone loves a rugby game that's nice to watch. I always say that's why I'm a Quins fan. I love when the ball's thrown around.
Yeah.
But everyone appreciates a game when you have greats having fun. And I mean, it was just like, from everything from, I mean, Argentina warming up in the black shirts with 11 for Lomu. It was just a game of respect, a game of fun, and it really, it's good for our sport, I think. It makes you proud to be a rugby fan.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to leave that there, that weekend's roundup there. Plenty of great rugby played, and we'll preview this weekend's rugby in a little while. We're going to move on to the news now, and of course we're going to start with the really tragic and sad news that All Blacks legend Jonah Lomu died last week, sadly aged 40, gone far too soon, far too young, an absolute hero in the game of rugby. Just a few stats that I've picked out. He was inducted into the Rugby Hall of Fame in 2011, but by no means least was that his, you know, his biggest achievement. 73 appearances for the All Blacks. His debut was in France, versus France in 1994. He scored 43 tries for the for New Zealand. Youngest ever All Black to take to the field in a Test game at 19 years old, 45 days. Some of the records that he holds, it's incredible. He still holds three Rugby World Cup records. Equal most tries with Havana, and that stands at 15. Most clean breaks, 32. And most metres made, 1,219. And, you know, you just got to look at the influence that he had on not only the big names like, you know, Richie McCaw said he was his childhood hero, but all the way down to your local club rugby and your 6 and 7 year olds who still knew who he was, and you know, he had such that influence and that impact on the game. Rob, I know you're a rugby player, so I'm going to come to you first. What did Jonah Lomu inspire you to do?
I wouldn't say he inspired me to do anything, but I do. I'm old enough to remember actually watching the semi-final of the 95 World Cup and watching him run over Tony Underwood and then Mike Catt in the same move. I think what he did was he actually showed what he was in terms of physicality and sort of strength and fitness and speed, what a professional player was going to be before we got to the professional era. You look at players now like Nadalo from Fiji, who yes, he's still considered big, but you have players like George North. Now, a winger doesn't, a guy that's 6 foot something and 200 pounds doesn't have to be a second row or back row anymore. If he's quick enough, he can still be a winger, and there isn't that sort of pigeonholing anymore. If you've got the physical attributes to play a position, you play it now, no matter what your size. If you're quick enough, you are a winger, no matter if you're Shane Williams or Jonah Lomu size.
Yeah, and Kate, he was just one of these players. He was such a familiar name and such a familiar face around the world. He was a worldwide superstar. Richie McCaw said last week that when he first played alongside him, he stepped off the New Zealand coach, and a whole crowd came towards him, and he thought they were coming for, and the crowd just ran past him and just turned around, and he turned around and realised they were for Jonah. And he was such a superstar, wasn't he, Kate? And, you know, for what he meant to the game and what the game meant to him, he's just, you know, immortal in that sense, isn't it? The fact that what he taught people, not only who play rugby, but that support the game as well, it's never going to be forgotten, is it?
Oh, completely. I mean, I'm the other end of the spectrum. I'm a 20-year-old girl. 1994, he made his debut. I wasn't born.
Yeah.
I still remember my dad gave me a little DVD. I must have been 7 or 8 at the time, and it was Lomu's face versus Johnson's face, and it was one of the first rugby DVDs I ever watched, and that was the year when I was starting to get into the game. And you say, remember 95, that was the year I was born, and he still is, like, that's still one of my first memories of being a rugby fan, and look at me now, and he's still one of the people that I credit to be that's why I became a rugby fan, and he was the person I was reading about when I was a 7-8-year-old kid who decided she loved rugby. So I think it's so wonderful that he's impacted every single generation, from people that have known him and played with him and been around his whole career, to people my age, to youngsters who everyone knows his name, and he's one of those people in sport that will go down in history, and he will be a legend forever, and his name will be remembered. So tragic news, but also a wonderful celebration of his life and how much he's actually impacted the game and impacted all of us.
I think Callum, you say there is right, everyone knows his name, and he's one of, rugby doesn't have many of these, but he's one of the few that sort of transcends the sport. People know who they are who have no idea. But I mean, yes, we as a rugby community are all celebrating his life, but this was like headline news on the front of the news, not the sports news, because people know who he is who have no idea about rugby, who outside the World Cup don't know what goes on. You can't think of many that really do. Maybe Johnny Wilkinson, Francois Pienaar, but those that truly transcend. I mean, I know we're going to come on to his retirement, but I wouldn't say Richie McCaw has got that status at this point, that everybody around the world knows who he is. But John Lolomo is one of those players.
Yeah, and he was like you said, Robbie. You know, people didn't necessarily have to follow rugby to know who he was. He was just this superstar name, but he was so humble with it, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And you just have to see some of the names, some of the famous people, and who have obviously paid tribute to him. Matt Dawson said he was the greatest rugby player who globalised our game and inspired millions. I'll proudly say to my kids, I knew and admired him. And you know, for you to not even have to be an All Blacks fan or to be a rugby fan, everyone can still have a part of what Joan Lomu meant to them, can't they, Kate?
Mm.
Definitely. I think when you're sitting in England in a community of uni students, for me, and I can talk about that with my friends, and usually I'm the sort of person my friends are like, oh God, Kate's talking about rugby again. And it's one of the few things I've actually been able to discuss with my mates and sit around the table and actually sort of talk about. And I mean, apart from that, Johnny Wilkinson's probably the only rugby player they've ever heard of in their life. I live in a house of five girls. It's not really sort of did a table conversation. So I think for something like that, and for an All Black, a Southerner, someone that's not from our side of the world, and we're sitting around the dinner table, to me, that's more of a credit to him and his game than I think. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, we asked a few listeners to send in their tributes about Joan Lomu and what he meant to them. Paul said, it's a huge loss to world rugby. Jonah was a legend. He impacted and changed the face of the game forever. Tony wrote in and shared this lovely story. He said, I remember being in the pub when I was about 21, when it was the 95 World Cup, with my friends in Newark. We'd obviously heard a lot about this lad from New Zealand, but of course, with no YouTube back then, we hadn't seen him. So he rocks up against England and everyone is having a great time. The ball gets spun out to him. It goes a bit behind him. He casually picks it up and sets off like an arrow loose head from a bow. He killed England that day, and not one of us minded. We actually marvelled at the sporting icon that could comfortably share the headlines with the likes of Pele, Ali and Schwarzenegger. He has left a huge hole that will never be filled. And I think for stories like that from just, you know, people who remember him from sitting, you know, they were sat in a pub watching him on the TV screen in the 95 World Cup, to people who were fortunate enough to meet him when he was an ambassador for this World Cup in England. He's touched so many lives, whether they play rugby or not, and it's just lovely, isn't it, Rob?
Yeah, I think he's... I never got the... I was never fortunate enough to meet him, but from stories I've heard of people that have, he was very much sort of gentleman of rugby. Like on the pitch, yeah, he was this huge monster that would just destroy anything in front of him when he had the ball, but he was always seemed to have time for his fans and that, and I think that's always as much of his legacy as what he did on the pitch.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, his career was almost cut too short with his kidney disease in 2002 when he had to retire. Thought he was going to come back to the game, but unfortunately that didn't happen. And again, it's almost like his career, his life was cut too short. And and obviously we're all very sad here at Last Word on Sports, and thoughts and love and kindness go out to his family and friends, because obviously it's such a tough time, and you know, for us to be saying what we remember of him, whether we met him or not, it's not going to touch upon the sadness that his friends and family are going to be feeling. So yes, so really, really sad news, and obviously he touched many lives, and like we say, he'll be immortalised in rugby, and he'll always be a legend. So So that was that. Moving on to some other news now. Eddie Jones has been announced as the new England head coach. The Australian, who obviously was head coach for Japan during their successful World Cup this time round, is signed a 4-year deal after Stuart Lancaster resigned a few weeks ago. Rob, on last week's Absolute Flanker,
to be fair
to you, you said that he was your ideal head coach for England, and your wish came true. So thanks, Rob, for that. So I'm going to come to you and get your thoughts on this.
I think it's a very good position. I don't think any of the Premiership coaches are ready. I don't think, I'm not saying they can't be ready for the next time it comes available. I think some of them are very talented and they're getting on that way. But it was made very clear that the RFU wanted someone with international experience. Well, there isn't anyone in the Premiership that has that at this point. So it was coming down to a few people. And I thought Eddie Jones would be much better than what was put in the alternative, which was Jake White, because I think he gets the best out of players. And I think that's what we need right now. We've got some talented players. We've got some very good young players, and those players need developing and getting someone to get the best out of them rather than just lock them in and say, okay, here you go. So if you look at how he got the best out of Japan, I think that's definitely something he can do with England. And obviously, with the talent he's got available and the resources, you can implement that at the next level. So
There has been a few rumours going around about his work ethic and how hard he gets his players to work, and that he, from a player's perspective, he can be a little bit difficult to work for. But Kate, perhaps that's what England needs. You know, they need a bit of revival. They need someone to put the fire under them and get them really spurred on and going, because, you know, to be honest, I think we can all agree that this past couple of years, it's just been so-so. And you just have to look at the Six Nations, and they've been there or thereabouts. They've never won the Six Nations this past couple of years under Lancaster. Do you think that Jones is the right choice, Kate?
I do. We talked about how meticulous he is, and there's that silly story that he was doing defence coaching drills with Japan for the South Africa game, something like 18 months in preparation, and then look at the result of that game. He's frustrating because he said absolutely nothing, and he's been so careful to not say anything about coaches or players, and I mean, all the talk about Borthwick, and no one really has a clue what's going on, so he's absolutely frustrating. But I love that he's come out and said, look, it's a fresh slate. He's made a very clear reference to Cipriani, for example, that anything can happen.
Yeah.
He said everyone needs to up their game, but he's prepared to give everyone a chance, and I think that's really a really nice way to start sort of a coaching career. And I really do believe that, I mean, he said he's going to go around and talk to all directors of rugby in the Premiership and go to the games, and he's a hard worker. He's something at his press conference last Friday, he said he was up till 4 a.m. Like, he will do it. I believe he'll do it. And maybe that's what we need. And we've seen, even in Europe, all these homegrown talents we're talking about, all these names we're throwing around, man of the matches that are English talents. It's there. We just need someone to foster it. So a little bit weird having someone say, all right, Nate, at the end of every interview. And
yeah,
just Friday's interview, I can't count the number of times you hear Nate, which
you notice that a lot with Steve Hansen, don't you?
Absolutely.
It's just part of them, and it's
quite endearing, really.
It is, really. And you just kind of think, you know, sometimes you forget that there is a human behind the head coach role, and, you know, perhaps he'll bring a little bit of something new to that role. And he has said, talking about, you know, that he's going to go and talk to the head coach directors of rugby at the Premiership clubs. Richard Cockerill said that he was so for that last week when I was chatting to him. He said it would be nice for whoever took the role to actually come to the clubs themselves and see what's on offer, not only who is currently in the England squad, but who's coming through and who could be a possibility a few years down the line. He's also said he will have talks with Chris Robshaw about his position. He's going to see where his head's at, see what the deal is after the World Cup, and, you know, it's a waiting game to see if Robshaw will sustain that captaincy role. Rob, can you see that happening?
I think Robshaw will probably stay involved. I don't think he'll stay as captain personally. I think Eddie Jones will want to sort of make his own mark and have his own captain and have his. The captain is very much the coach's voice on the field, and he'll want that man to be his own and not someone he inherited. I think when Eddie Jones is going to speak to Chris Robshaw, it's going to be to say, much like he said about everybody, you've got a blank slate, you've got as much chance of being in this England team as anybody else. If you play well enough, you will get your chance. But I would imagine Jones will probably look for his own captain.
Yeah, and I'm assuming he's going to come in and hopefully do the right thing. Just, you know, forget about everything that's happened in the past and over this World Cup, and just come to it, like you say, clean slate, play how you want to be picked for England. And, you know, if you're not good enough, then you won't get in the team.
Mm.
He's
Sam Burgess for England captain, anyone?
Well, I don't know. Depends how much money the RFU could throw at him to bring him back. There was a little bit of confusion because the Stormers barely 10 days ago had confirmed that Jones was staying with them. He'd, you know, confirmed that he was, you know, being loyal to them. And now all of a sudden he's part of the RFU, and the RFU had said that, and especially Ian Ritchie said that money was no object. So is it that it's kind of going down that route that they can just throw as much money as they want at somebody? Obviously he's the first foreign head coach of the national side, which is a little disappointing. And I know David Campese had a big rant on national radio about that. Actually,
Campese not have a rant?
Oh, this is true.
Especially at England. If there's a shot to be taken at England, Campese's already taken it. So I think the Stormers thing, as I said last week, is basically keeping the party lines until deals are done. I think negotiations were probably happening, but in case things fall through, no one wants to look. To have egg on their face, look foolish. They will, until the conversation has agreed, it will still be he's staying here or I'm staying here. Because if things don't go through and they end up staying there, and Eddie Jones said he's going, or the Stormers said, oh, he's going, but then the RFU and him can't agree terms, the Stormers suddenly say have a coach that they look like they don't want.
Yeah, it's playing it safe, isn't it? He's also
that minute last week when the photo of him came out of him boarding the plane, and Twitter just went mental.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's got a plane, he's got a plane.
That's it.
I think that it's a sort of contrast you get in the modern era with what happens on social media, where you get the rumours, you get the like little glimpses of somebody in somewhere, which, not that they shouldn't be, but that they said they wouldn't be, sort of thing, because what you say in the written press and what you announce and release to the public only happens when things are confirmed.
Yeah, there's, especially with social media, there's no place to hide now, is there? He has also said that he is going to maintain the RFU's policy on not picking players based overseas, again, except for exceptional circumstances. He's going along these lines about Armitage and all this stuff again. It's almost like he's telling the RFU what he wants to hear, but if there's a chance to bring Armitage in, and if that's the right decision, then he will bring him in. But Kate, can you see that happening? Can you see that actually with a new head coach, there's new boundaries and perhaps new faces in the England team?
I think this is probably the most likely time that it will happen. It's the sort of thing that if he does it from the start and starts bringing him from the start, you can kind of justify it. And then in a new rule, new head coach, it'll be interesting to see, especially with him saying this very early on that he's not going to do it. Exceptional circumstance, though, is his get out clause, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't think he will pick them. I think because you're still looking at only really two players that are potentially doing. I know David Strettel has joined, and the two out there, but we've got plenty of wingers. I think I don't think he really needs to call him up when you've got the likes of Christian Wade sitting at home at the World Cup. I think David Strettel, as much as he's a good player, isn't really a factor in this. You're still looking at Armitage and Abandonen. I don't think he's going to call them up, because when you looked at what Michael Checker did with Australia, he had a lot of players that were abroad that he wanted to bring in and try and get back, and they actually managed to get some people out of contracts and get them back into Super Rugby. When it's two players, you can sort of say, okay, we've got some good young players in those positions as well, if you really want to play for England, you come home.
Yeah.
I think that'll be Eddie Jones's thing. You look at, I mean, I think Benderden has a bigger problem than Armitage in the fact that you've got players like Mike Brown, you've got Ben Foden's coming back from injury.
Yeah.
Alex Goode was showing good form at the end of last season for England in the warm-up game. So he, as much as he's won the European Player of the Year very recently, it's not like England are devoid of fullbacks.
No, and it's the same protocol that obviously Lancaster had with the World Cup, that actually you've made the choice to go overseas and in most cases take the big wage packet. If you've made that decision, then you've ruled yourself out of playing for your home nation. So it's almost
it's not like these players...
Yeah, it's not like they're not aware. It's not.
Yeah,
that
these players moved after this rule.
Yeah. It's and I think, like you say, if Eddie Jones stamps his authority and, you know, proceeds with this protocol and this policy from the beginning, then, yeah, there's a get-out clause saying in exceptional circumstances. But I'm assuming, as long as he puts that marker there and actually sets the boundaries from the off, then no player can go unaware and be caught out, can they?
No,
and I really hope he does, because I think the whole thing we've been talking about is him. We said that there was no coaches already in the Premiership, but he's already talked about sort of using that talent, using what we've got, and going to talk to all the directors of rugby. It's really sort of bringing English rugby together. And if he does what he says he's going to do and go out and talk to different teams and talk to people like Cockers, and he's making it far more England centric and really sort of investigating England sort of below the layers and first down, and just the teams that line up, the 15 that line up every week.
The thing is, though, as well, you've got a lot of players who are now coming into the Premiership who are dual registered or who can you qualified to play for England. I'm just thinking about Brendan O'Connor, who has recently signed for Tigers. He is, I think he's played 2 matches for them so far, and he's just been an outstanding player. And, you know, for him who it can qualify as an England player, he's another one that actually can fulfil the requirements that an England head coach might need, and won't need to look elsewhere, because actually if these players are coming into the Premiership, they've got the qualification to play for this national side, then why go to France and try and get guys who have purposely moved out there? So it is a protocol that obviously there's two sides to every story, and I know everyone has different views on this. And before the World Cup, it was the talk was very rife about it, about Armitage and stuff. So yeah, we'll just have to see what happens there. But I think we're all in agreement that it perhaps should go ahead.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah. Definitely. We're going to move on now to obviously we touched upon it earlier that Richie McCaw has retired. The 3-time Player of the Year is retired after a sterling 14-year Test. An All Blacks career. He is one of those players that that like Lomu will take a long time for him to be forgotten, and he has been such an influence not only on the All Blacks and people in New Zealand but across the world. You know, here in England during the World Cup, he was just one of them big names, and wherever he went, whether it was on the pitch or off the pitch, he was pictured and talked about, and Kate, he has had such a great career, hasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, watching the World Cup final as a very, well, English fan who found Welsh blood suddenly in the World Cup, but you were willing New Zealand on for Richie. I think he has that, as much as you can hate him, because you can, and he does play nasty and there's all that talk about him, he also has that kind of lovable quality that for a rugby fan, you just have to respect him. And I was an All Black for the day for Richie, and
it's almost like the do it for Richie, do it for him, and every, you know, it's almost like everyone else comes up because he is the captain and he's such an inspiration. Rob, he has had such an amazing career. He's the only captain to lead a team to 2 World Cup victories, obviously 2011 and this year as well. Youngest ever New Zealand captain when he led the team out in Wales in 2003. He was only 23 years old himself. Most cap player for New Zealand, 148 caps. He's just had the most amazing 14-year career, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, to spend 14 years offside is no mean feat.
that's
But in all seriousness, you don't become a nation's all-time leading player in terms of caps without having to say about you, and especially a nation like the All Blacks, who
it's New Zealand, that's not any nation.
No,
yeah,
it's
but even, no, that's what I'm saying. You don't become any nations all without having something about you. You certainly don't become the All Blacks all-time leading cap test player without having a lot about you. So he's obviously had a great career. He's won 2 World Cups, which is more than obviously anyone, well, obviously the players that were there, but he's the captain of both. So he's definitely going down as one of the all-time greats. And yeah, as I said, the man that gets away with more than most as well.
Yeah, that's very true. And there is the joke, obviously, he's going off to be a bit more of a pilot with helicopters, and there's that joke that actually you can enter a helicopter from the side, whereas you can't break down.
Well, Richie McCaw proved you could. He did it for 14 years.
Well, he did, and he very rarely got caught. But he's, you know, he said himself, the last thing I wanted to do was to limp to the end. And he feels like he's gone out with his head held high, hung his boots up, and you know, gone out proud with obviously the biggest victory he can with that World Cup championship status. And he, again, I mean, I've interviewed him and I've spoken to him as a player, and he's, as you know, he's not only being a fantastic player and an iconic player, he's such a nice guy. And I think a lot can be said for the All Blacks, but him certainly, he's such an inspiration both on and off the pitch, and for a lot of the younger All Blacks coming through. He's just a gentleman of the game, and he is such a true leader, and he's done so much with that side. Like we say, he's, I think some statistics, he's won 89% of all the games he's ever played, which, you know, for a player...
That must get boring.
Well, I, you know, but I'm not sure...
Come and play for England. You mix it up all together. Sometimes you
win, sometimes you lose. Yeah.
Sometimes you don't.
You never know what the result's going to be.
Yeah, you know.
If you're winning 80%, you know you're going to win before you've started. It's boring.
Yeah, he's 131 Test wins, 110 as captain. He's only been defeated 15 times in 148 Tests. 4 Tri Nations titles, 3 Rugby Championships, and 2 consecutive World Cups. That is some yeah. accolade there, isn't it? And you just think, you know, he's what's next for him, Rob?
Something to do with helicopter piloting. I don't know what you can win doing that.
No, that's true, unless there's some sort of, you know, stunt piloting
some Red Bull X helicopter thing.
Yeah,
maybe. Get him and enjoy himself and settle down with his family life. And
yeah, I think
that's like rugby.
I'm not sure you settle down with family life by flying a helicopter.
Yeah, he's Rich McCaw. I don't think he's ever going to be the normal type, is he? Though.
No.
Do you, Kate? Do you see him coming back to the rugby pitch in some form, as a pundit, as a commentator, presenter, as a coach?
I think he'll be back at some point.
Like Schwarzenegger, he'll be back.
He will be back. No, he's such a face and he's such a name. Someone somewhere will get him back on board. Everyone's going to be begging for him at some point. So.
Come 2019, whoever has the English rights or whoever has the New Zealand rights will drive a fairly big truck of money up to his house to give their thoughts on their coverage.
Yeah, buy him a new helicopter, I'm sure he'll.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll. I think he's probably going to have a fleet of helicopters by this point. But
yeah, I think he's pretty sorted, to be honest. I think he's got it. He's got it pretty well.
No, it's sad to see him go, and they are huge boots to fill. Whoever takes over that role, are we going to throw any names out there? Who's going to be taking over the New Zealand captaincy? I personally am going to say Nonu, but I think he's retiring as well. So
yeah.
So that's my dream out of the way, because anybody who knows me knows that he is a big inspiration to me, and I don't even play rugby. So who do we think is gonna fill them shoes as All Blacks captain? Any names? We've all gone a bit quiet.
I think it's too early to say, because obviously England's captaincy needs, which we're talking about, needs to be sorted out quite quickly, because you've got the Six Nations coming up. The All Blacks won't come together till the summer, so. Steve Hansen has got time to sort of mull this decision over more than Eddie Jones has for England, and he can make sure he gets it right.
Yeah, I don't think there's any sort of fear in changing around a bit or giving people, I mean, we've seen even sort of in recent weeks what they've said, it's not necessarily going to go straight to one man and that'll be at the takeover like Richie for the next half many years. I think it's far more of a transitional phase than England, who have got a month to put a team out. So
it says a lot about the player that he's held the captaincy for that long, and like we say, I'm not sure that's going to happen straight away, and I'm actually not sure that's ever going to happen again, because he's such an iconic player and such an iconic leader above everything else. So yeah, it's
I mean off the top of my head, maybe Kieran Reid,
okay,
as a potential one. But as I said, I think Steve Hansen will take his time before really sort of nailing this down, because he, as Glenn said, he hasn't got to name it in a month. He's got 6 months to name this.
Yeah, definitely. And it'll be good to see who does step up to that mark and take on that challenge. But yes, Richie McCaw retiring, 34 years old, and after such an amazing career. So congratulations to him. Moving on to the last couple of bits of news now. As reported on last week's Absolute Flanker, Wales lock Luke Charteris has signed for Bath from Racing 92. The 6'9" second rower has 62 caps, and he will be joining them at the end of next season. I think it is. Sorry, at the ahead of next season. So another great signing for Bath. Who's just re-signed for them?
Dave Atwood's just
re-signed. But thank you, Kate. A good few names on the roster there coming up for Bath. Exciting times for them, definitely, Rob.
Yeah, obviously, Charters brings a wealth of experience with him for playing in Wales, playing for Racing, playing for Wales as well. With 62 caps, is you don't get that by without being a good player, and he's going to bring that experience. Probably won't play every game. He's got the north side of 30, so you do tend to, like myself, you tend to play a few less games. But that is what these clubs are looking for, is that strength in depth, and to bring in a player of his quality is only going to help them.
Yeah, it's. I think Charteris has said himself they put a lot of emphasis on player development, making sure that everyone is improving no matter how experienced they are. And he's described that as a very exciting environment to be part of. So I think he is very much looking forward to joining Bath. Apparently Gloucester had held discussions with him.
Yeah.
Newport Gwent Dragons had hoped to re-sign him after his stint there a few years ago. So Kate, he's clearly found his home with Bath from next summer, and he's clearly happy about his move.
Yeah, and Dominic Day's just extended his contract at Bath, so he'll play opposite another Welshman. So it'd be quite nice for Bath to have two Welsh locks. I just can't believe there's another 6'9" player coming in. I'm going to stand on the sideline at Steve and be absolutely dwarfed once again. So we just keep bringing in these monstrous Welshmen who make me look like a complete dwarf on the sidelines. So
brilliant. We'll leave that one there. Also news that Crusaders coach Todd Blackadder will finish after the 2016 season there. He has said that he's done there and he's finished with Crusaders, and he's going to be very happy to have achieved everything that he has there. And I think for him it's going to be a bit of a swan song this season. He's going to be bowing out on a high, or hopes to end it on a high, Rob. He's not done badly with the Crusaders the past few years, has he?
No, he's done all right, but a bad week for Super Rugby teams keeping hold of their head coaches.
Well, yes, that's very true. That is very, very true.
It's the off-season, but you thought, too, okay, obviously one's not going to the end of the season, but yeah, he'll look to go out on a high. He'll be putting his all into it, and obviously he's done well there, and I'm sure his players will want to send him off on a high note as well.
Definitely. I think he's been there eight years, I think it is. He will have been there 8 years by the end of the 2016 season. So Kate, he's had his victories there, and his alongside his losses, but he'll definitely be remembered in a positive way, won't he?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's got three of their seven titles there. I think it's really lovely that he's put this out now with no sort of commitment to anything in the future. He's just said, I'm going to enjoy this season and we're going to like focus on this team and this time now. And I think that's really lovely that he's given himself now a season to really sort of end on a high, and he's not focusing on anything else. This is him. He's still a Crusader. He may be leaving them, but he's there till the end. And
yeah,
I think that's a great, really great attitude to leave on. So
definitely. And finishing with that, that rounds up our news for this week. We're going to preview this weekend's action, and it goes back to the domestic leagues now. Aviva Premiership kicks off this weekend with the Northampton Saints versus Gloucester game. That's followed by Sale Sharks versus Newcastle. Exeter will play Harlequins. Saracens will start on Saturday the London doubleheader with their game with Worcester Warriors. And then at 5:30 at Twickenham Stadium as well, London Irish will play Wasps. And then on Sunday, Leicester Tigers will host Bath. So the London doubleheader with Saracens and London Irish both playing at Twickenham against Worcester and Wasps respectively. But other than that, Rob, what game are you looking forward to?
Tigers against Bath. It's definitely a clash of the big, a couple of the big teams. These are both teams with aspirations of winning the Premiership this year. So I think it will be very much a very nice year. I think Tigers might edge it, being at the Welford Road. Obviously, they didn't do too well at the Rec last year, but they do get the fans behind them when they're at home. So
yeah, there is that. I think it was a 48-0 defeat. At the Rec last year. That has got to be playing in the back of their mind, hasn't it, Kate?
Yeah, but new season, new year, back of two big wins in Europe. They're at home. They'll be excited. It's a big game. Tigers love that sort of thing. They'll pull out the stops. They won't dwell on that.
Definitely. And I think for me, the another game that I'm really looking forward to is Exeter versus Harlequins. Quins, again, after great victories in the European league, they're going to be going to Chiefs and travelling down there and hoping to get another win under the belt and, you know, continue riding this high wave, aren't they, Kate?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Also, you've got Quins, Exeter, which is 2-3 in the table, and obviously Leicester, Bath are 4-5 in the table. So it's sort of the top teams are playing each other, and they're the ones that are vying for top four places. And these are the results that actually matter. These teams need to be going away and need to be winning. Quins need to be able to go to Exeter and pull out the win if we want a top four place. And I know it's easy, like early in the season, and easy to say that, but these games do matter. And being back to back all season, it matters this early on. If we record that, so. An interesting game. I'm quite excited. Exeter, a bit of a bogey team in the past.
Yeah, Catherine, do you think this game should have been at Twickenham though?
Do you think it should have been part of the London doubleheader?
Should Quins be playing at Twickenham this weekend rather with Wasps and Worcester rather Midlands for a London doubleheader?
No, because we have the big game.
Okay.
I missed the years where I got two Twickenham visits in a year, and my dad would fork out for Twickenham. I pay my own season ticket, but he'd always take Twickenham, which was very nice for me. So I miss those days personally.
Yeah.
big game for me. I'm a massive fan of the big game. That's not just because it's Quins; it's such a family day out. So we have that. We can film Twickenham on our own. We get 84,000 every year. We don't need the London doubleheader anymore. So
yeah, this is it. This is, you know, clearly you can go on your own now.
She says, we'll see what happens at Exeter.
I don't know.
Different views next week.
It's going to be a great weekend, especially with that London doubleheader. Big, big crowd there at Twickenham expected. And two games to the price of one. And I think both Saracens and London Irish, as the home teams, will be looking to get them wins. Obviously, London Irish playing Wasps, who are just incredible right now, and obviously used to be London based, so we'll see what happens there. We're going to move on to the Pro 12 now, and Edinburgh will face Newport Gwent Dragons, Glasgow Warriors host Benetton Treviso, Leinster will play Ulster, Ospreys will play Cardiff Blues, Munster face Connacht, and Scarlets will play Zebra. Kate, I'm going to come to you first on this one. What match are you most looking forward to?
Munster Connacht, it's got to be one versus two, both at 6 wins from 7. Going to be a big game.
Yeah, it's going to be the sort of mid-season, if you can call it that, decider. Rob, what about you? Obviously,
I can't disagree on that one. Yeah. Munster Connacht both have been playing very well. Munster have got their win in Europe as well for the game. The one game they did play, obviously the other one was postponed. So they will both want to continue this form, and it will, should be a very good game.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I'm looking forward to that Scarlet Zebra game on Sunday. That's, I think it'll be great to see how Zebra travel and fare in Wales, especially after their victories on the trot and how well they play at the minute, as we said earlier on in the show. And I think Pro 12 is getting a little bit more competitive as the season goes on, and same with the Premiership, as you said a little while ago, Rob. The back-to-back games mean that there is no room for error, and get, you know, teams have got to have that rotation. They've got to be on it every week, and it's going to be an exciting game of an exciting weekend of rugby for sure. And I'm looking forward to it. So that's it for Absolute Flanker this week. And thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to Rob and Kate for coming on this evening. And you can follow us on all the usual social media channels. You can follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/LWSFlanker. On Twitter, you can follow us at LWSFlanker. And Rob, you are on Twitter as well at
LWSRob.
And Kate, you're on Twitter at
Catherine M. Cole.
And I am on Twitter at Molly Ray Maria. And also, you can follow the Last Word on Sports Rugby Department at LWS Rugby Union. It'll be great to hear from you and let us know your thoughts on this week's news and on the games that are coming up this weekend. And it'll be great to hear from you. And thank you very much. And we'll see you next week.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.